I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
All right, hold on just 1 minute while people come in. All right, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Richard Raley from the Southampton County Bar. I represent Cheryl Palin. This relates to an accident that occurred while she was an inmate at Southampton Correctional, well, actually at Southampton, at Deerfield Women's Department, on April 26, 2013. This is a fairly simple case. Shortly thereafter, in timely fashion, she filed a notice. It described that she was an inmate, how the accident happened, the other two defendants, one being an assistant warden. It described that her complaint was she wasn't issued the proper footwear, and she tripped while working in the Southampton complex and injured her ankle. She gave a notice as required by the statute. The notice, as the court well knows what the requirements are, listed everything but didn't expressly list the agency. It did describe her as an inmate. It did describe a co-defendant as a warden. And the very acts that she complains of were things that could have only happened if she was an inmate. The Commonwealth complained, said we didn't list the agency. And the court, on a plea of sovereign immunity, dismissed the motion, the complaint. Now, we rely principally on Bates versus Commonwealth, decided in 2004 by this court, and that deals with UVA Hospital. If everybody knows that UVA Hospital is a big place, lots of departments, lots of buildings.
But in that case, the place was identified. It was UVA Hospital.
Right. It was expressly identified.
Well, in our case, the agency was not identified expressly.
I take it that under a reasonable interpretation, if Justice understands, that, sure, it listed the hospital. Unlike Haverstam, which was a pothole case, which just said a parking lot at a large urban university. This said UVA Hospital. Lots of apartments, lots of rooms. And in that case...
Can I interrupt you again?
Yes.
You say under a reasonable interpretation, but this court, through a series of cases, have said over and over again, we don't reasonably interpret it, we strictly interpret it. We put the thumb on the scale on requiring an express compliance as opposed to a reasonable substantial compliance. Now, whether that's a good rule or a bad rule is not really before us. But if we're going to be consistent, how can we not say, if you don't mention agency at all, then that's obviously insufficient under the strict construction rule?
Well, if it pleases the court, the way I read Bates, the thrust, and Bates may be a departure from Haverstam, even though in Bates the court expressly says that Haverstam and Melanzo are still good law. But in Bates the court set out the major function of the notice is to give the Commonwealth an opportunity to investigate. And Bates, there's language that says in combination, reasonable identification. The whole idea is to give the Commonwealth a chance to investigate. In this particular case, it would be unreasonable, at least in my interpretation, to say that the Commonwealth couldn't reasonably investigate.
Is there a distinction, counsel, between Bates and its analysis and holding? Because Bates was looking at the place requirement. Can they reasonably investigate based on the place where the incident allegedly took place?
Well, I think also...
But the statute also requires that you identify the agency. So even with the reasonable ability to identify under Bates, you have to agree that, and I think you've already agreed, that nowhere in your notice is the agency identified, which is a separate requirement.
I understand your point, but I point out that under Bates, we're talking about reasonable identification. You don't know it. No, my notice doesn't say expressly Virginia Department of Corrections. No, it does not. But it reasonably identifies. And the Commonwealth would have no trouble whatsoever in investigating under the notice. Now, Bates is a medical malpractice case.
Your argument proves too much because this court has held that even actual notice, specific expressed actual notice, when there is an insufficient written notice under the statute, is insufficient. But of course, actual notice would permit the Commonwealth to do as much investigation as it wanted to do. So if that were truly the only thing going on here, that case would be wrong as well.
Yeah, and if the court is aware, I know the court is aware, that actual notice generally refers to the older cases where you had municipal liability or something of that nature. And the notice was never given, or given was given an insufficient form. My point is simply this. The statute says identify the agency. Now, in a perfect world, when I wrote that notice, I would stamp at the top, Department of Corrections. But I didn't do that, because it was so fundamental to me that you would know. I didn't even worry about that, and perhaps incorrectly. But my point is, under Bates, we talk about reasonable identification. We talk about the combination of factors. We talk about could the Commonwealth conduct an investigation. And I think if you apply the teachings of Bates, you have to decide that the notice here was sufficient, at least to some extent, enough to give the Commonwealth an opportunity to investigate it, and enough to give us the opportunity to go forward and try the case on the merits. The other cases that I anticipate...
Counsel, what do you think the purpose of naming the agency is?
Well, I think in many cases, such as the old Fairfax case, actually that's a circuit court case, but they didn't. They sued both Fairfax County and the Commonwealth of Virginia. In that particular case, both the Commonwealth of Virginia and Fairfax County are responsible for highways. In this particular case, under the factual scenario laid out in the notice, and only the Department of Corrections, we talk about an assistant warden, we talk about where the accident occurred, and we talk about she was an inmate.
But if it's a case such as the one you just described with Fairfax and the Department of Transportation both being responsible for highways, and they guess wrong or they point the fingers at each other, wouldn't that be the very reason why it's still important that the agency be named?
I can see that an express naming of the agency would be better, but I can say that under this case and under a remedial reading of the statute, that there would be no hesitation on anybody's part as that would inhibit an investigation by the Commonwealth from the time the notice was received. To me, the Tort Claims Act is remedial legislation. It's intended to help people address their alleged wrongs. And to hold that notice requirement to say, even when all the circumstances point to the Department of Corrections and say it had to be expected, would be to defeat the purpose of the statute. Thank you.
All right.
May it please the Court, on behalf of the Commonwealth, I am Michael Parsons of the Office of the Attorney General. The notice requirements of the Virginia Tort Claims Act, which have been set forth by the General Assembly, are specific, they are straightforward, and they are absolutely mandatory. One of those requirements is that a claimant must include in her notice of claim the agency or agencies alleged to be liable for her injuries. Ms. Phelan failed in this case to allege any agency at all in her notice of claim. That failure bars her lawsuit against the Commonwealth, and for that reason, this Court should affirm the judgment below. Now, the rule is strict compliance with the provisions of the Act. This Court held in Melanson that the Act provides a limited waiver of the Commonwealth's sovereign immunity to be sued, and therefore a claimant must strictly comply with the provisions of the Act because that Act is in derogation of common law. While a notice may not take a prescribed form, it nevertheless must include three pieces of information: the time of injury, the place of injury, and the agency or agencies alleged to be liable. Now, while on its face, Ms. Phelan's notice appears to satisfy the notice requirements with respect to time and place of injury, it clearly fails to satisfy the requirement with respect to an agency or agencies alleged to be liable, because the notice does not allege any agency at all. That is a failure to strictly comply with that particular provision of the Act.
Well, if you allege you're injured inside a penal institution, what other agency could be liable?
Well, in this case, and on the record in this case, Ms. Phelan alleged that the injury occurred at the Southampton complex. Her notice does not identify the Southampton complex as a Department of Corrections facility or a facility of any agency.
Well, what else
of the
could
Commonwealth.
It be? What else could it be?
Well, based on the record and on the notice, it is unknown if we're talking about where the injury occurred, because the Southampton complex is not identified as a Department of Corrections facility. Admittedly, Ms.
Well,
Phelan,
you and I are going around circles, and maybe I'm not being very clear. But if, under her allegation, who other than the Department of Corrections could be the agency that you seek to make liable?
I am not aware of another particular agency which could be involved in this case, but that
well, nobody else runs that institution, do they?
Admittedly, the Department of Corrections operates the Deerfield Women's Work Center. That is, Ms. Phelan identified herself as an inmate of the Deerfield Women's Work Center. She stated in her notice of claim that her injury occurred at the Southampton complex, which in her notice is not identified as a Department of Corrections facility. And that's what we have before the Court on the record. And that is the limited information we have before the Court on the record. And this is what Ms. Phelan would have the Commonwealth to do and have this Court require the Commonwealth to do, is to guess or conclude which of its agencies is liable based upon the clues in her notice.
Well, she lists the warden. A specific name of the warden.
She does identify Willette Copeland as a warden. But once again, this is yet another one of her clues that she is asking the Commonwealth to rely upon in concluding that the agency that she intended to be liable was the Department of Corrections.
Suppose Ms. Raley called you up after issuing a facially insufficient notice and you started to talk with him, and you go, well, your notice doesn't include the agency. He goes, well, obviously it's the Department of Corrections. Would that oral actual notice be sufficient under our case law?
That would not be sufficient. That would actually be, that would be actual notice, which this court has held to be insufficient for purposes of complying with the Act. The Act requires that the claimant include in her written notice of claim the agency alleged to be liable, and even if the Department of Corrections or the Attorney General's office was made aware that the Department of Corrections was the intended liable agency, that is still, under this court's precedent, insufficient. The claimant must state in her notice of claim the agency. Now, once again, Ms. Phelan would have this court turn away or set aside the clear and plain and unambiguous language of the statute and require the Commonwealth to discern from the information in her notice which agency or agencies she intended to be liable. However, the General Assembly did not impose such a requirement on the Commonwealth. Rather, it has imposed the requirement on the claimant to provide that information. She has simply failed to do so.
I'm not sure that I'm aware of it in the record one way or the other, but I have was concerned about Justice Coons' question that he asked, and I wondered what else could be in the Department of Corrections or in a penal facility like that. And are you aware of any other Virginia agencies or departments that work in cooperation with the Department of Corrections? For example, the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation that would partner with the Department of Corrections and have programs inside. Or the Department of Education that may very well be conducting GED programs and things of that nature. So that someone who's injured in a Department of Corrections facility may very well have a claim against a different agency who's partnering with the Department of Corrections. Frankly, I expected that to be your answer, but...
Well, all the more reason why the claimant must specify the agency or agencies which are liable, because...
Oh, right. This was what is categorized as a friendly question.
Very friendly.
Right. I mean, I don't know. To be honest, I am aware from having been a circuit court judge and having been, actually even long before that, a probation officer, that the Department of Corrections does not carry on all of their programs alone. And they do rely on other agencies for assistance.
And I understand that to be the case as well, Justice. Finally, Ms. Phelan relies on this court's decision in Bates v. Commonwealth, which is distinguishable from the case before the court today for this reason alone. In Bates, the notice of claim identified a specific place of injury. Now, the Commonwealth in that case argued not specific enough. This court said no, it was reasonably specific to satisfy the purpose of the Act. The glaring distinction here is that Ms. Phelan specified no agency at all. And that's why Bates does not apply in this case and is distinguishable here. Mrs. Phelan's notice of claim is her notice. It's hers to include any or all information she wishes to include in it to satisfy the notice requirements of the Act. The Commonwealth is not going to complete her notice for her, and the General Assembly does not require the Commonwealth to do so. Ms. Phelan simply failed to comply with one of the basic requirements of the Act to allege an agency liable. That failure bars her lawsuit against the Commonwealth, and for this reason, the court should affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Raley, you have 5 minutes and 42 seconds.
If it pleases the court, I think it's necessary, and maybe I'm just a country lawyer, to look at the entire notice. And if you read that notice, that Port complained of or alleged is that the warden and an employee failed to issue her proper footwear. And as a result, while an inmate, she failed. Now, going back to the Chief Justice's question, could there have been other agencies? I think if you read the entire notice, and using the words in Bates, substantial compliance, reasonable identification, in combination, when you read the entire notice, the conclusion is inescapable that although the notice doesn't say expressly the Department of Corrections, it certainly says that implicitly. If you adopt the Commonwealth's position, and the Commonwealth relies to a large extent on Melasison, I probably mispronounced that.
Mr. Raley, may I interrupt you for a minute?
Sorry.
You're familiar with the actual notice cases, right? That if you give actual notice of everything in the written notice statute requirements, you give actual notice orally, or they come and figure it out 100% on their own. There's no doubt whatsoever of the facts of the circumstances of the case or who's liable, what agency is implicated. As I understand Virginia law, and you correct me if you disagree, that's not enough, based upon not a remedial reading, as you suggest, but a very strict reading. And that law has been there for a long time, and we're interpreting a statute. The General Assembly has not throttled back on our interpretation by amending the statute. Are you really setting us up to reverse prior cases?
No. No, Justice Kelsey, I'm not. There's no question in this particular case, and I'm not arguing, that the Commonwealth had prior notice of this. She was injured at the complex. She was treated by the Department of Corrections. She complains because she filed grievances. The Commonwealth had notice. I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing that the notice that she filed complied with the statute. Now, we might disagree about that. And what you think is more important than what I think. But that's my position. If you take the Commonwealth's position at the threshold, and it relies heavily on the case about hand-delivered notice and the case about the parking lots at George Mason University, then you have to ignore the way I read Bates. I read Bates as talking about reasonable identification. I read Bates as talking about substantial compliance. I read Bates and talking about in combination, putting them together. And I think when you apply those under the context of a remedial statute, that sufficient notice was given, and Ms. Phelan should be allowed to go forward and try her case on the merits. Thank you.
Call the next case.